welcome. This is a pre-recorded version of a Bad Bat Cast live show, and I am probably on my way back from Chucktown, and I'm sure that we had some reports, people calling Chuck's show last night and everything. But just so you know, there's nobody here to answer the phone today. So, without further ado, I'm going to play a pre-recorded podcast show of the show. This is dating all the way back to January of 2011, and it was Redfish Chuck's first show. So without further ado, here you go. And we will talk to you next week about the boondoggle and everything else and all the great fish that we caught. So if you don't want to listen to the rerun, hang up now. Don't call the show. I'm not here. Nobody's here. So I will talk to you later. Late.
Please hang up and try again.
Yeah. Give me a yeah, Mark.
Yeah.
Can't help but go yeah when you hear that. The kayak angler, or the, God, where am I talking? Kayak fishing radio music kickoff. Hey, man, here's Chuck. Got Chuck on. Got the landing crew, Wheeler. Welcome to yet another edition of the always dreaded kayak fishing radio late show. I'm your host, Rob DeVore, otherwise known as A Bad Batcast. And got a landing crew, Mark Wheeler, on the line from Virginia. And I got my guest, Redfish Chuck, coming up here in a few minutes. But you know, checking in, saying hey. And we're on a, you know, it's another week of you listening to my annoying voice talking about kayak fishing, fly fishing, and all of that good stuff, all the stuff that we know and love, right? So let me get Chuck on here, and you know him as on yakangler.com as the always illustrious Redfish Chuck. He fishes and guides in Mosquito Lagoon. If you don't know that, that's like one of the world-class fisheries that you want to go to catch gigantic redfish. So let's bring Chuck in. Hold on 1 second. Okay. Chuck, you there?
I'm there, buddy.
Okay, cool. How you doing, man?
Doing good.
Awesome. Hey, can you... are you echoing or am I echoing?
No, sounds good.
Oh, okay, because I just did something a little bit different tonight, so I don't want to... Let me know if it starts echoing on you or something like that, and I'll sort it out. But,
right.
So how you doing, man? You've been busy at the fly tying bench, man. What's the story? you're not fishing,
well,
so, you know, you got a new child, so you're just not fishing so much and tying flies instead, eh?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. No, it's just something I decided I wanted to pick up. You know, I just I've built all my own fishing poles for the last couple of years now, and kind of mastered that a little bit, and it just seemed like the next logical thing to move to would be fly tying.
Oh man, so, I used to tie a lot. You know, I don't fly fish as much as I used to, but I still love it. But I could remember a time when I would tie flies so much. I mean, I like doing that as much as I like fishing. So
it's definitely a stress reliever. I really enjoy it quite a bit.
Yeah, Miss Batcast. You know, I was showing her some. You know, she thought that was really cool that you know you could just tie your own flies, and I was showing her you know all my fly boxes, flies and stuff, and she's like, I want to learn how to do that. You know, I want to give it a shot. And I'm like, man, you should see some of the first ones that I did. You know, You have a special place for them where you like, you know, keep them in the fly box from hell, where you know you just want to look at it for a joke or something.
Yeah, you know what's funny is the first fly that I ever tied, I actually found recently. My father mother sold the house that they were living in and moved to a house a little bit closer to me and my wife to help us raise the kids. And my dad came across an old tackle box of mine, and the fly, I actually tied that fly on his workbench with the actual, like one of those big bites that you would use in the garage, you know?
Yeah, the big bench vise. Wow.
Yeah, my material was nothing more than a feather from a swan that lived in that lake that we lived on, and a couple of strands of carpet fibers, and I found some pencil for some Christmas ornaments, and just kind of put this ugly caterpillar-looking thing together, and hey, it worked. You know, first time I took it out to the Indian River, and second cast, I caught a little small sea trout on it. So, you know,
no
I retired
kidding.
That fly. Yeah, oh yeah. I retired that fly and said, you know what? I said, if a sea trout will eat this thing, they'll eat just about anything. And I kind of put it down and didn't do anything with it until probably about 2 or 3 months ago. I started picking it back up again.
That's awesome. Wow, that's cool. So, you know, I always thought that redfish flies, you know, you always see, I don't know about you, but I, you know, look for, and it'll be, you know, redfish flies, and I'll look at them, and man, those things are always so damn ugly. You know, what is it about those things that the redfish just like? I don't know what it is, but man, you know, it just looks ugly as all sin. So tell me, what you know, there's some different stuff going on at Mosquito Lagoon there, you know, where you're at, and the river, Indian River and stuff like that. Is there a tide in Mosquito Lagoon or no, since it's all landlocked?
No, the Mosquito Lagoon is actually not landlocked. It has an opening at Ponce Inlet, and the very south end of the Mosquito Lagoon, there you won't feel a tide, or you won't see the effects of the tide at all, because it's just, I think it's just a little bit too far removed from the inlet. But if you travel about 20 miles or so up the lagoon towards Ponce, then you really start to kind of feel the effects. In fact, up around New Smyrna area, Oak Hill area, there's a pretty good like 2.5 foot tide swing up there. It doesn't sound like much, but when you're talking about fishing in an area where your average water depth is about that, then you know, it's quite significant. We get a really good shrimp on up there too, and that's the time you want to get out there, is when that tide starts rolling, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, that's weird. I always thought that Mosquito Lagoon was landlocked. You know, that's why they have such giant redfish in there, because, you know, the stuff that I've read about it, you know, I thought that that's why that the redfish were so huge, because they can't get out of there.
Yeah, well, it is kind of, I guess in a roundabout way, it's kind of landlocked. But no, it comes into the, into Ponce Inlet, which obviously flows directly into the ocean. Now, that's with that being said, that's a good, you know, 30, 40, maybe even 45 or 50 miles from the very south end of the Mosquito Lagoon. So it's quite an adventure, you know, for them to get there. The reason why I think we see the abundance of big fish that we do, and especially in the Mosquito Lagoon and the North Indian River itself, is that you're right, they are pretty much landlocked. The fish that are coming into the lagoon from the river, they would have to travel, if not to Port Canaveral, to go through the lock system, which is almost impossible, but all the way down to Sebastian Inlet. And that's another, by boat, that's probably a 2-hour trip from the lagoon, by car about 1.5 hours. So, you know, it's a long way. And I don't know, man. I can tell you this, that if you've never been in the Mosquito Lagoon, or if any of the listeners have never been to the Mosquito Lagoon, it's definitely something you got to take the time, go and check it out. I mean, there's islands in the lagoon that you can rent to go camp on. I think it's the closest thing that we have to the Keys without going that far south, because the water's just absolutely.
That's awesome. You know, I've never fished there, but I've always wanted to. You know, that's definitely on my list of places to go. And I want to get over there this summer. So, so what kind of kayak do you use there, Chuck?
I fish out of Emotion Kayaks. I'm actually part of their fishing team, sponsored by them and all. And I fish out the Grand Slam. It's a 14.5 foot boat. perfect for the kind of the style of fishing that I like to do. I don't sit down a lot. I tend to stand up more than I sit down, and I like to push pole or paddle myself around standing. I guess I get a little bit better visibility. But yeah, that's my sled of choice.
That's awesome. Did you hook up the Yak Angler crew when they were down here last summer?
Yeah, we went out. We did some fishing. Well, we did some looking. How about that? yeah, the weather the day before wasn't the best. The weather the morning of wasn't the best. It was kind of windy. We just had a front kind of come through, so it kind of messed the fish up a little bit. But I'm pretty sure that Adam and Mark got a chance to see a few of those big slob redfish that people talk about all the time, because we had a school of about, I don't know, maybe 30 or 40 fish that kept working back and forth in front of us, sometimes within feet of us. And you're talking 40-plus inch fish, every one of them. And they were on the tail, and they're not tailing, and they're just cruising. And it was kind of frustrating. They weren't in the mood to eat anything. So, but at least they got a chance to see what that looks like, you know. Big fish pushing through
water.
Pretty impressive.
They were telling me about that, and it was, you know, it sounded awesome. No, they have some Emotion kayaks. Did you hook them up with those kayaks when they were here?
I got them kind of in touch with Dave Sims from Auburndale, from Action Paddle Sports, I believe is the name of his business. He's the head honcho for the Emotion Guide Service or Guide program, I should say, and pro staff. So, I told them to get a hold of him, let him know that I sent him there. And Dave, you know, he's a good guy. He knows that this industry is pretty much run anymore on word of mouth. And, you know, they knew they needed to take care of those two guys. So I think they were pretty happy.
Oh, yeah. You know, I was out fishing with them when they were, you know, down here. I took them out to Sand Key. And it was really funny. We went we were paddling probably a half a mile, maybe it was close to a mile, but, you know, we weren't like, they weren't, you know, beating the water with their paddles or anything, but they beat us back to the, me and Chip and the clone, they beat us back to the put in, like, by, I mean, I'm not kidding you, they got there probably 15 minutes before we did, you know, so those things are definitely a lot faster than the stuff that we were on. It was pretty funny. But,
yeah, I'll tell you what, that's the one thing that I noticed about that boat is that how fast it is. I mean, where I fish, again, in the lagoon and in the north end of the Indian River, most of the time where I put in is not where I'm going to fish. I got to put in the paddle anywhere from, you know, 2 to 4 miles away from where I put in to get to a flat to where I know the fish are at. Right? So the speed of the boat, the stability of the boat, again, for standing, how quiet the boat is in the water, it's just, you know, it's perfect for my
That's awesome, man. You know, hey, everybody has their own, you know, something about a certain kind of kayak that just really appeals to them, you know, and that's great. You know, there's so many different kinds of good kayaks out there, you know. It's just on what you want, you know, what you want in your, you know, to fish with or, you know, whatever you want it for. So it's awesome. So tell me something else. You know, have you ever gone fishing with D?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah?
Yeah, on a couple of occasions, actually. And let me tell you something, man. I give that lady praise all the time, and sometimes it might sound like I'm kissing her butt. But D, it takes a lot to impress me as far as fishing goes. I'm friends with a lot of the guys in the area. I'm friends with a lot of professional anglers, and that doesn't mean anything. If we get warriors, they're as good as we are. But it's like to see a woman do what she does in the sport that's basically dominated by men is pretty impressive. I don't care who you are, you know. I mean, it's like I say all the time, the lady can just flat catch gigantic trout, you know.
Oh,
I'm not a big trout expert. I mean, I've caught my fair share of fish over 25 inches, and I've caught two over 30. But I've never seen anybody catch consistent numbers of giant fish like she does down there by around Sebastian area.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I see her pictures all the time, and I'm like, man, you know? I mean, I know y'all's trout on the East Coast are is a lot, you know, your trout are a lot bigger over there than they are here, you know? But, yeah, that's definitely, I mean, I see the fish that you catch, too. I mean, you get on some really good fish there, too. But, man, you're right. I'm like, what is in the water over there where there's just consistent 30-inch trout that she's pulling in? And I'm like, what the heck?
I can tell you that if anyone's considering making a trip over here to the Space Coast or down towards Burren, down there south end of Brevard County, the reason I think the fish over here are so large, including our snook and everything else, is that there's so much bait in the water. We have a tremendous amount of bait over all year round. It's not like the bait's gone. We've got shrimp, gigantic shrimp that move through the river in the wintertime. Talking like lobster size shrimp, just monsters.
Yeah.
We have pinfish and pigfish and croakers and whitebait and mullet and, I mean, you name it, we have it over here. And, you know, those fish just, they're so spread out, you know. I mean, think about how long and how vast the Indian River Lagoon system really is. If you figure that it goes basically from north of Daytona all the way down through, I mean, Indian River County and on down south, almost through Stewart and everything, it's a pretty long body of water. So, you know, those fish have a ton of habitat to hide in. I mean, they've got the room that they need to get big. They've got the forage they need to eat to get that big. And pressure, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of people that fish over here, but I don't think those fish are nearly as pressured as another area. Body water so fast.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, over here, you know, there's not so much bait this time of year. You know, the bait over here gets kind of sparse, and they have to, you know, the fish are still around. You know, the reds are still around, the trout and everything. But, you know, sometimes a finger mullet, I've heard that there's been finger mullet mortality on this coast, you know, around the Clearwater and the Tampa area. And, you know, also, you know, the fish are feeding on, you know, gobies and blennies this time of year, and a lot of crabs too, you know. So it does tend to get kind of, you know, in the wintertime over here. So that's awesome. I didn't realize that you guys had bait, you know, over there year-round. And we do get shrimp runs like that too, but that's more you know, towards the late summer, early fall, you know, and I've seen, you know, at the sky, around the Skyway Bridge, that place just get lit up by, you know, big, huge schools of jumbo, gigantic shrimp, you know. So that's definitely a big factor, I guess. If they got food to eat year round, man, and they're going to eat all the time, that's a great thing for them.
Yeah,
so,
and the redfish is the same thing, man. I mean, it's like probably per area, like if you were to break it down per, I guess, square acreage, I'll have more redfish on the side of the state than you guys do over there. But, you know, the thing about it is in the wintertime, a lot of guys forget or really focus on what these fish are feeding on, in order to present the proper artificial bait or even a natural bait. I've seen guys this time of year throwing giant topwater flutterfish, like it's the springtime or towards the fall when the mullet are running. Well, the mullet aren't running right now, you know? And that's one of the reasons why I'm really, really pumped on tying all these fly patterns right now, because the other day I was out with my wife. We were just basically paddling around. I was checking out a new area, and everywhere you look, there's small baby horseshoe crabs, there's little blue crabs, little spider crabs, there's shrimp in the grass, an overabundance of crustaceans. And that's really what these fish seem to hone in on in the wintertime is the crustacean diet. They don't have to move very fast. They don't have to exert a bunch of energy to get to it. It's just, it's an easy pickings kind of deal.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, I can never tie crab flies that well, you know. I have a couple of, you know, like tarpon patterns that I tie, you know. But those are kind of big, you know. I'm kind of trying to get a little bit smaller, you know, so I can imitate. So around here we have a lot of fiddler crabs, you know, around mangrove areas. And I find that, you know, they're going to key in on those too, man. So
Go ahead. We got a bunch of fiddler crabs as well. And it's kind of funny because actually I need to let you know when this happens, but every summer, these fiddler crabs just all of a sudden just show up out of nowhere, and there'll be thousands of them everywhere you look. And,
yeah, it looks like a big, like, rust-colored carpet walking across the beach.
Yeah, it looks just like that, and it's funny because in the lagoons, in the areas that I fish, there isn't a lot of mangroves. You know, it's basically just dirt and then a road, you know, or dirt and then just a creek, you know? So the whole shoreline will be blanketed with them. But anyhow, they'll be, you know, anywhere from, you know, a school of maybe 5 or 10 fish to a school of 100-plus fish. And every one of them will have their backs out of the water. They'll be that shallow, swimming right up against the bank looking for those fiddler crabs who are just barely in the water. And I've actually seen them almost do what, if you've ever watched any of the National Geographic stuff, I actually watch them do some of the stuff that the porpoises would do, where they'll kind of rush in and skim along and grab something and skim back off, almost like hydroplaning.
Yeah, yeah.
It's wild. It's like the coolest thing you've ever seen. But there's times of the year when they do that, and then they're real easy to catch, man. Because, I mean, you're not even looking for a tail at that point. You're looking for an entire wad of back sticking out of the water.
That's awesome. I've never seen anything quite like that, but That I never knew that they did that. That's great.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, and it makes for real easy fishing because they're not really paying attention to what's going on around them, so they're not very skittish at all, you know?
Yeah. Now, in that situation, do you just, you know, throw something up on the beach and drag it back into the water or something?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I'm kind of anti-live bait. I like nothing but artificial, just awful. But sometimes you find even those big 40 and pushing the inch fish, I mean monsters, will be in that skinny water like that, and they'll be just up there disgorging themselves with other fish. And if you don't throw a crustacean in front of them, they're pretty much just going to ignore it. So yeah, a well-placed cast with a shrimp up on the sand and dragged into the water right in front of them will work every single time.
No kidding. That's funny. You know, I have seen that, the fiddler crabs, you know, like where it looks like there's just a huge wad of them by the thousands, and it looks like a big, you know, rust brown carpet, you know, walking across the flipping, you know, the water's edge there. And, you know, one time my buddy Ken Morrow from El Paso, Texas, he writes the Upstream blog there. He'd never been saltwater fly fishing before. So I'm like, you know, he's going to be in town and all that stuff. I said, come on over, you know, I'll take you out and we'll go, you know, chasing some redfish down. And sure enough, man, we saw that. And I was like, wow. You know, didn't see the redfish coming out of the water after him or anything. But I have, myself personally, have never seen that before where there was, you know, just like this big, huge, you know, walking carpet of crabs, you know, your fiddler crabs walking around, you know. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is. And something else that's pretty cool, too, is if you pay attention when you're paddling close to shore in the summertime, every now and again you look down and you'll see just random claws just laying around from fiddler crabs that have been munched on and their claws were let go or whatever. And it's usually a pretty good sign to kind of sit around in the area for a little while, you know.
Yeah,
there's days where the bite will be right at sunrise, and if you're not there at sunrise, you're going to miss out on the bite. And there's days where it takes till about 10 or 11 o'clock for the fish to really start turning on. And I found that a lot of times our fish over here, too, are very much like on a schedule, you know. I can fish a school of fish today, go back and fish them the same exact school of fish tomorrow, and they'll be in the exact same place at the exact same time. And they'll stay there until the forage is gone. When the food's all gone, they'll leave. But sometimes that can last a month, 2 months, 3 months, you know. The south end of the lagoon, there's a spot we call the whale tail. Very famous area for giant redfish. And we had a school of fish that was on the whale tail for probably 4 months. Same school of fish there every single day. and you're talking about giant fish, 40, 50-inch fish, you know?
Wow.
And for a fish that size to hang out in one spot for that long at school, you know?
There's got to be a lot of food for it.
Yeah, it says a lot about our forage in the area for sure.
Definitely, yeah. If they're sticking around one area like that, man, that would definitely, you know, tell me that they're eating something if they're sticking around. You know, it's like my dog. My dog is on a schedule, you know, and if it's the weekend or something and she eats at 5 o'clock at night, man, I tell you what, you could set your watch to it because she's sitting there telling me she's ready to eat her food, you know, anywhere from, you know, 10 till to right around 5 o'clock. You know, she knows. So that's funny that the redfish are doing that too.
Yeah, in fact, I'll tell you a funny story real quick.
Go ahead.
I fished with a very good friend of mine, Captain Travis Tanner, who fishes the Mosquito Lagoon quite a bit. In fact, he was, or maybe still is, Blair Wiggins from the
fishing. Yeah, Addictive Fishing.
Addictive Fishing, right. He was his redfish partner in the tournament. But anyhow, Travis one day took me out, and he's like, look, bring your camera. I'm going to get you on a pig. And I was like, all right, well, if he says he's going to catch you a big fish, he'll put you on a big fish. So we get in his boat, his Ranger Banshee, and we run over to this one spot, and I didn't see anything when we first got there. And he says, just wait, just be patient, just hang out. They'll be here any minute now. And he keeps, you know, kind of like looking around, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, here they come. And here comes this wall of water being pushed down the flat. And if you can imagine, 140 to 50-inch fish in about a foot and a half of water, swimming like they had somewhere to go. It's quite a bit of water movement. I mean, you're talking, you go from a foot and a half of water to a foot of water just by the sheer push of the water in a matter of seconds. And he's like, all right, buddy, cast out in front of him. And we just threw a chunk of ladyfish or a chunk of mullet. I forget what it was. But ended up landing one of the biggest redfish I've ever caught on 10-pound Power Pro and 12-pound monofilament leader. Just an absolute thing, you know. But that's the kind of fish we have.
That's awesome. That's a great story.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Let me ask you this now. You know, on the fly fishing side, you know, do you, you know, what kind of a? I've heard different opinions from people that, you know, you have to have, you know, something that's high quality, and it's got to be a Sage or, you know, or a Loop or something like that. But do you find any, you know, that big a difference in quality as far as the blank goes, you know, between a cheaper rod or, you know, something that's going to cost you a grand?
As a rod builder, I could tell you that one of my favorite rods I've ever built myself, the blank cost me $15. Okay. And I've got rods that I've built, the blanks cost well over $100. And this little cheap inshore rod that I got from Mudhole was probably one of my best purchases I've ever made. I personally don't see the benefit of a $700 fly rod as opposed to a $200 or $300 fly rod or even a $100 fly rod. TFO makes a great rod, and they sell them relatively inexpensive as far as fly rods go. Fluger even makes a good rod. You know, there's a bunch of companies that are making good products right now, and you don't have to pay for the name. I'm not knocking the higher end companies at all. I mean, trust me, if I could afford to have a lineup of Sages or a lineup of Loops or a whole, you know, pile of Ross reels or T-Bores or Nautilus, then I probably would. But being that I'm on a budget as well as most other people, no, man, I don't really see that much of a difference for what we do, for catching redfish, catching trout, catching black drum. Now, when you start getting into fishing for giant tarpon, bonefish, permit, some of those kind of things where you really need to make long casts and the rod has to be very responsive and, you know, you're catching sailfish or marlin or tunas on fly, then, yeah, obviously things are a little bit different then. But if you're going after a marlin, sailfish, tuna, permit or bonefish, chances are you've got the money that you can buy a Loop or you can buy a Sage or, you know. But, you know, again, I'm in the tackle industry. I work at a tackle shop in Port Canaveral, and we sell everything from Ugly Sticks, you know, $39 rod, to we build custom rods for guys. We built a set of Marlin rods for a dude last year. We built a couple sets of Marlin rods. We built some tuna jigging rods that cost, you know, excess of $700. So,
wow.
You know, it takes all kinds. Everyone kind of has their thing, you know. I mean, fly fishing in general, as you know, it can be a very, very expensive sport.
Oh, and yeah.
I think that's kind of turned a lot of people off from getting involved in it. And it's kind of disheartening because you don't really have to spend a lot of money, man. My first combo that I ever had, my grandfather bought me at Walmart. It was a Mitchell combo. I still have it. It's hanging in my garage. Mitchell fly reel, Mitchell rod, you know, just cheap stuff. Nothing. I mean, you probably paid $40 for it. But
yeah.
I caught everything that swims in the river that you can catch on fly on that rod, except for a redfish.
Wow. Well, you know, that's one reason I got into, you know, writing my blog was when I first started researching, you know, fly fishing, you know, saltwater fly fishing, you know, that was all I could find was, you know, the sages and the loops and stuff like that. And that's great. I mean, those are they are really nice products, you know. But, you know, like you, you know, so I'm on a budget too. And plus I'm like, man, I don't know if I would even want to do, you know, spend $700 or $800 on a fly rod, you know, if I'm going to, you know, just, you know, snag a mangrove on a back cast and bust the thing anyway, you know. You know, that was the thing. I couldn't find enough information. And, you know, I was telling somebody today on Yak Angler on the forum, you know, that was asking about, you know, fly fishing equipment. And I said, listen, man, you can't go wrong with one of those, you know, Temple Fork Outfitters, you know, starter kits. You know, it's like $199, I think, for the whole, you know, and it's the rod, the reel, the case. It comes already rigged and ready to go, man, ready to fish. That's like a really good, you know, if you're not sure you want to get into fly fishing or you do want to get into fly fishing, that's like, you know, the way to go. I would point anybody in that direction because that's a pretty quality setup, you know.
Yeah, you know, and I like the Temple Fork stuff and the fact that they've teamed up with Lefty Cray. Let me tell you, that's all you got to say. You know, I mean, the guy's a legend, you know, and he is probably, he is obviously in the top echelon of fly fishermen in the entire world. But, you know, again, man, tackle is what it is. You don't have to spend $1 million in order to have some of the best stuff that's out there, you know, and that's the beauty of the industry now is there's companies that are making good quality products, even out of the fly stuff and get into like the spin stuff. There's this, like Shimano, for instance, which is, I mean, that's my bread and butter of our business. This is the Shimano stuff. We sell, I don't even know how much we sell a year in Shimano, but it's a ton. And the beauty of that company is they get it. You know what I'm saying? When I say they get it, they understand that not everybody can afford to buy a Stella for $700 or $800. A spinner.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
There's, you know, and not everybody can afford to buy a Sustain at $300, and not everybody can afford to buy a Stratic at $159. You know. They have to have something for everybody's price range, and a lot of these companies don't understand that. They just don't get it. It's like you either buy a reel for $30 or you have to buy their $150 model, you know. And there's
yeah.
there's no like happy medium, you know. But like for instance, a company like Shimano, you go, all right, well, this is my budget. Check my buddy. My budget is, you know, $150 for a combo. Okay, well. This is what I would do for you, because to me, the reel is more important than a rod. You know what I'm saying?
Yo, absolutely.
The reel is way more important than the rod.
Yeah.
You can get a Walmart special 7'6" to 12" medium action, any kind of spinner rod, doesn't matter the manufacturer, and throw a good reel on it, and you've got a decent combo. Is the rod going to break? Is the guy's going to fall out of it? Probably, but you paid $40 for it, so who cares?
but your
reel won't take a crap, you know. I mean, I don't mean to get away from the fly thing, but
no, it's fine.
What I sell, what I try to put people into is good quality equipment that will last them as long as it needs to last them to make the reel worth it. And what I mean by that is if you break down the cost of a reel, so let's just say, for instance, the Shimano Saros 3000, okay? A great saltwater rated reel. It's got 15 pounds of drag. It's got a waterproof drag. It's got a aluminum body, shielded bearings, propulsion system, this, that, and the other. Nice big fat padded handle for guys with big hands like myself. holds a pile of line, you know, and smooth as butter. That reel retails for $129, okay? $129. But if you go fishing even just 100 times in a year, or less than that, 50 times in a year, and the reel lasts you 5, 6, 7 years, if you divide the amount of days that you go fishing to the price of the reel and figure out exactly what you paid per trip to have that good quality equipment, it's nothing. You're talking like $2, $2.50 a trip, if that, to have a good piece of equipment in your hands. It's kind of a funny way to think of it, but, you know, it's the truth, you know?
Yeah.
Like kayaking, for instance, right? I would never skimp on a kayak, you know? I would never go out and just get a kayak just to get a kayak. I just, you know, one of my buddies did that recently, and I laughed at him, and he was like, well, why are you laughing at me? And I go, well, dude, you just wait till we go on a paddling excursion, and we're paddling side by side, you and your kayak, me and my kayak, and see how much faster my boat is than yours. I'm not going to wait for you. You just have to catch up, you know? And stroke for stroke, I mean, you said it earlier.
Yeah.
I probably left him a mile behind me, literally. And when he finally caught up to me, he was like, dude, I got to sell this thing. I got to go buy a new boat. And the funny thing is, he didn't end up getting an Emotion. He ended up getting a Heritage. But it was just funny, you know, because he realized, man, you really do get what you pay for anymore. But that doesn't translate over into the fly stuff, like we said. It's just, you know, it's basic. The reels are basic. There's not much to them, really.
And you're right. You know, as far as, like, you know, if you're going after tarpon and bonefish and you know, bigger stuff, you definitely, that's when the reel really, really matters on a fly rod. Because, you know, those fish run for a long, long time. You know, you're going to get into your backing every time with those things. But you know, your redfish, your snook, your trout, you know, things like that, you know, it doesn't, you can, you know, I'm not saying to go out and skimp on your reel, but, you know, you can. You don't have to get a great, you know, spend $700 on a, you know, on a decent fly reel, you know. The one thing that I found, you know, I use Fluger, okay? I use a Fluger, and you'll laugh at me, a Purist rod, okay? Which is great. I just have a little Purist 8-weight. They don't even make them anymore, you know. And I have the Trident reel, you know, Fluger Trident reel. And I love those reels, man. Those things they're affordable, and those things are bulletproof, man. I can't tell you how many times I've dunked them in the water and everything else, and, you know, you just clean them off and hose them off, and those things are great. You know, I've had spinning reels, you know, crap out on me before that thing did, you know, dunk it in the water once, and it's history, you know. I don't know why. I don't know why that is. I mean, I know salt water is not a friend to anything, you know, I don't know why my Flugers hold up and my other stuff doesn't, you know.
Well, and it comes down to really what the raw materials are that are being used to build the reel. And most of these fly reels anymore are either cut from, like, stock aluminum or some sort of an aluminum stainless kind of a mixture. And, you know, I don't know, man. The 7-weight that I fish with all the time is a Lamson Radius, a company from Waterworks Lamson. I'm sure you're familiar.
Yeah, those are nice. That's a nice,
it's a great
rig.
Reel.
Mm-hmm.
I love the reel. The reel's great. In fact, a little funny tidbit about that. I picked that up on a deal out of an outfit in Montana. A friend of mine who came into town, who's pretty much just like a world traveler, the guy just kind of, he retired me, goes wherever he wants to go to go fishing all the time. What a life, right?
Yeah.
He goes out, and he's out there in Montana, makes really good friends with these guys that own this outfitters out there. Obviously, Montana being a huge fly area, tells me when he gets back, listen, man, if you ever need anything, look these guys up. I mean, I know you're in the industry. You can buy stuff, you know, through your outlets or whatever, but I don't really have very many outlets for fly stuff. So I give these gentlemen a call. And I'm kind of picking their brain a little bit because this is the first time I'm really going to invest any money into a reel, a fly reel. And I ask them, well, what do you got? What do you got that's available right now that's relatively reasonably priced, but yet has the quality that will stand up to saltwater? Because that's all I'm going to use it for. I'm not going to catch bass on it. I'm just going to catch redfish, black drum, whatever happens.
Right.
The guy goes, we have these lamps in radius, 7/8, I think it's a 7/8 on clearance. Like, well, that sounds cool so far, pretty promising. Well, what's the normal price? And I think the normal price was, I don't know, 179, 180, maybe 200, somewhere in there. And they were selling them for like 79 or 89 bucks. And I said, dude, just okay, enough said. Can you put line on it? So the guy put line on it for me, told him what kind of fish I'm going to be doing. He knew exactly what I needed. He's been to my area a couple of times, apparently, to fish. So he knew exactly what I needed to hook me up. The rod that it's on is from a company called Diamondback. It's a Diamondback backcountry or backwater. I forget what the actual family name is on the rod. But it's a 7-weight rod, 7 or 8-weight rod. And I picked that rod up, brand new, in the sleeve with a tube from a gentleman who was just didn't want it. He had it, didn't care to fish with it, $50. So,
wow.
You know, $300 rod, I got $50.
Yeah.
Bucks, so, you
can't beat that.
I don't try to push people towards eBay. I don't really try and push people towards online buying because it kills me. It kills me as a business, you know? I mean, we can't compete with those types of people. So, but when it comes down to, spending a couple of bucks on good quality equipment and getting the best bang for your buck, the internet is your friend. So, you know.
Yes.
Good.
I used to get, the place I used to get my Fluger Purist, you know, because I'd break them all the time, you know. It's not that it's a piece of crap rod, it's just I'm a piece of crap fly caster, you know. So I've busted those things, not because, once again, it's not the rod's fault that, you know, I snag the back cast on a mangrove and go full-blown forward cast and it just goes snap, you know. But I pick up a two-piece before they quit making them, but I could pick up a two-piece, you know, eight-weight Fluger Purist for like $30 at this little fly shop up in Massachusetts, and I could get it delivered to my door, you know, next day, you know, for like the whole thing was like $30. You know, it was easy. It was great. You know,
it's awesome.
But my thing that I want to do now, I have found a. It's a place called Wild Waters Fly Fishing, I believe is the name of that company. And they make, it's almost like TFO, you know, all of their stuff is handmade. It's very good. And they're affordable. You can get, you know, for somebody wanting to get into fly fishing that, you know, you've never done it, you can get a combo, you know, with a reel, line and the whole nine yards for like, you know, $99. You know, and they're based out of Rochester. so that's another inexpensive rod on the fly fishing side that I'm using. I have one of their 12 weights that I use for my tarpon, my 12 weight rig, going after tarpon on fly. And those things, man, that's a really nice rod. I tell you what, man, they do a really nice job. So one thing that I'll tell you, though, you know, I'm like really surprised, you know, because everybody's telling me, oh, you know, you got to get this kind of reel seat and everything, you know. And that might be true in trout fishing. I have never, you know, stream fished for trout, you know, out west. I've always wanted to go out there to that, you know, to Montana and Idaho and around that area, you know, Henry's Fork and stuff like that, and go fishing for, you know, steelhead or, you know, big rainbows and stuff like that. You know, and I've never done it, but they say that, you know, reel seats, you know, if it's made out of a certain material, I can't think of what right now, but there's a certain material that they make them out of that are just, you know, you're supposed to be able to pick up those little, you know, teeny tiny little hits that you get from a nice rainbow when it's cold out or something, you know. And that's one thing that'll, you know, drive the price up on come on, you build rods. What's the big, highly, you know, the vibration conducive reel seat that you would put in there that costs like an arm and a leg?
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of them out now. Some of them are made of carbon fiber.
Yeah.
Some of them are made of normal graphite. There's a few that are made of like a graphite plastic kind of a composite. But you know what? I mean, that's a totally different world. You know, honestly, those guys that fish those little tiny nymphs on like a number 12 hook, and I mean, that's a little bit more specific and a little bit more the word I'm looking for?
If you can tie those flies, you don't need glasses.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the funny thing is, like, those guys, I've got those guys that come into my store during the wintertime. Most of them are snowbirds. They'll come down and they'll, you know, fly fish the river for whatever, redfish, trout, whatever. And they tell me, oh, man, well, you know, we did really well this year in the Carolinas catching rainbows. Oh, what was the biggest one he caught? Oh, 14 inches. And you're like, really? Like, you went all the way to the Carolinas to fish for rainbow trout to catch a 14-inch fish, right? And, I mean, I use 14-inch fish for bait offshore. It's not like I don't get excited, or I shouldn't say that. I used to not get excited about the thought of catching a 14-inch fish. My family and I took a little mini vacation up to Gatlinburg, Tennessee. And in the center, if you've never been there, in the center of Gatlinburg, running down the center of the town is a stock trout stream.
Right in the middle of the town?
Right in the middle of the town. Like the main strip, you've got hotels, bars, Hard Rock, and all this stuff. And right next to it is a stream that runs right down the road, and it's loaded up with rainbow trout. In fact, there's 2 days out of the week, and I can't remember what they are, but you can't fish in the stream those 2 days because they stock the stream with a new run of fish. So they don't want you to harass the fish the first day they're in the water, apparently, but it's okay if you kill them the next day. I don't know. But anyway, so I'm standing there, and well, first of all, my wife neglected to tell me that there's a trout stream running through the center of the town we're going to be staying in, so I didn't bring any fishing poles with me or fly rods or anything with me.
Hey, Chuck, that's why she told you.
Yeah. So it didn't work out for her. So we went to... We're walking down the road, and I look over, and I see this older gentleman down there fly fishing. And I ask him, I'm like, what are you fishing for? Because I didn't see the trout at first. They're all rainbows. I'm like, shut up, really? Like, I look at my wife, and she looks at me, and she has this look on her face like, oh, shit. And I said, excuse me, sir, do you know where the closest Walmart is? And he's like, I sure do. It's up in Pigeon Forge. We drove 30 minutes to Pigeon Forge to go to Walmart so I can buy myself a fishing combo so I can go down and catch myself a little rainbow trout, right?
Nice.
I had never caught a rainbow trout ever in my entire life, right? One of those fish that was on my bucket list that I have to catch before I die, rainbow trout. Don't ask me why. I've always wanted to catch one. So I go down there to the stream. I'm standing next to the old man with the fly rod. And I got my little ultralight spinning combo with 4-pound monofilament and a little rooster tail with a little spinner blade on it with a single hook. Just can't use treble. And I went to Ace Hardware and got my fishing license. Got to make sure I'm legal. Went back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the guy reaches over, hands me a little film canister. Says, put it in your pocket. Don't show it. Don't take it out, whatever. Open it up. Be very careful. There's hooks inside. Pull out one of those hooks. Tie it on your line, reach back in there, you'll feel a little gummy thing, put that on the line, cast it out here and catch a fish. Because apparently they don't like rooster tails or something, I don't know. So I tie on this little hook, I reach back and down in the pocket, I pull out a little gummy thing, which is a little kernel of corn, stick that on the hook, flip it out right past this little boulder, and sure enough, as soon as it got down out of sight, fish on.
Awesome.
This fish was one of the smallest fish that I had caught in probably 10 years. Okay? Little tiny rainbow trout, maybe 8 inches long, maybe 9 inches long. You'd have thought that I had just released a grander marlin.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I was so pumped by catching this stupid little rainbow trout. My wife was in tears laughing. She's like, the ballyhoo you pull for dolphin and wahoo and sailfish is bigger than the fish you just caught. And you have a bigger grin on your face than you did when you caught your first sailfish. And I'm like, it's different. You don't understand. And I've got this little, I still have the picture somewhere. When I find it, I got to scan it and upload it. I got this little tiny trout in the palms of my hands. I had my hands together, kind of cradling it. And it just looks so small in my hands, and my wife is just laughing. I got the biggest shit-eating grin on my face. But yeah, no, man, rainbow trout, I mean, that whole, sorry, man, I know I got off on a tangent, but that whole...
No, that's okay.
That whole fishing, that whole freshwater stream, sockeye salmon, rainbow trout, native browns, whatever, that's pretty awesome, man, what those guys do. But that's specialized, and I can see those guys spending the money that they spend on their fly gear because it's a totally different style of fly fishing.
It is, and
you really have to have a sensitive rod. You have to have a sensitive reel seat. You have to have, you know, more high tech floating lines and sinking lines and this, that, and the other, and whatever. Absolutely.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And another thing that I didn't know that I learned this year. About that style is that, especially out west, there's a big difference apparently between stocked rainbow, you know, the rainbows that they put in their farm raised rainbows, and native rainbows. Apparently, there's like a big difference fight wise. You know, I mean, it's a whole new different ball game, and I mean, I really need to get out there, and you know, Miss Backcast was just talking about. You know, when she works in the school system, so she's trying to figure out when her vacation was this year, and that's, you know, one thing that we're kind of thinking about doing is going out west, you know, and you know, visiting some folks out west that I know, and getting to do some fishing out there in the Montana and, you know, Colorado area there. You know, and see what we can do, you know, see what all this trout fishing stuff is all about, you know.
Yeah,
you know, I went to, when I was a kid, I lived in upstate New York, and, you know, up there in upstate New York, you know, where we lived out in the sticks, you know, I mean, out in the middle of nowhere, you know, if you needed to go buy a loaf of bread or something at the store, it was like a 15 mile ride, you know. It wasn't just around the corner, you know. You know, the corner store was in the next town. So, you know, so anyway, up there, that's all you do is fish because there's nothing else to do. So, you know, we'd go, there's a fishing season for everything. There's like smelt season and there's salmon season and there's ice fishing and trout season and, you know, everything else that you can possibly have a season for fishing wise. And, you know, it was like the first day of trout season, and my dad's like, yeah, I know this place to, you know, that we can go trout fishing. And you know, we weren't fly fishing or anything like that. It was just, you know, your basic rooster tails, you know. And sure enough, we're pulling up to the spot, and the fisheries truck is just pulling out, you know. So we get down there, and apparently they just stocked the stream that we were at because – it was just like every other cast, we're pulling out these, you know, 10-inch brook trout or brown trout, you know. So it's quite a different thing than, you know, fishing around here, you know. The fish that we catch around here could eat those, you know, 10-inch brown trout for, you know, for a little snack. That's
yeah,
one thing,
sure.
You know, there was a message board that I was on recently and, you know, with the folks out west. And they have no idea about, like, you know, snook fishing and redfish and stuff like that, you know. So I was kind of telling them a little bit about that. And just as much as I don't know anything about fishing out west, you know, the stories that Isaac tells, you know, and some of the stuff that he catches out there fishing is just, like, totally unbelievable, you know? It's a totally different world.
It is, and I remember a couple of weeks ago we had a conversation on the earlier show with a gentleman out of California, and, you know, I get a kick, again, being in the tackle industry, I get a kick out of seeing all of the different stuff that is sold over there as opposed to what's sold over here. And I've contacted numerous companies to see if they'd be interested in getting their stuff over here on the East Coast. And you'd be surprised how many of them really just don't care. Like, they have such a following in California and Washington, Alaska and all that, that they don't really need to branch out. You know, they could barely keep up with the load they have going on over there, but the tackle is so different. Everything from the fact that they don't really use spinner reels over there. Most of it's all conventional style reels, bait casters and that kind of thing. But, you know, I just think that forums, like the internet forums, the web boards and stuff, and then also your radio program and the earlier program give us an opportunity to kind of interact with those guys a little bit, you know, pick their brains a little bit more, you know, because, hey, they might be fishing with a lure over there that we don't use over here, but if we threw it, it'd probably be like the man over here because this fish just have not seen it. And I don't care what anybody says, man. Fish are smart.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You know,
especially like over here, gulp was king for 4 or 5 years. And now, damn, man, I put gulp on the nose of tons of redfish and they just stub their nose at it or they run Mike Hell from it. You know? So,
yeah.
They're evolving, you know.
Well, I think that, you know, especially, I mean, I don't know how much pressure, you know, your fish get. I'm going to guess that they probably get, you know, as much pressure, if not a little bit more, you know, since that's like a world-class fishery, you know. But, yeah, they get accustomed to stuff. I've seen, you know, bass. I fished, you know, the same lakes for bass, and I've seen them get accustomed to the same color worms and stuff where you'd have to change up the color on them. And I've seen bonefish, you know, if you've ever fished for bonefish down in the Keys, man, those things have, like, PhDs, you know. They're not easy to fool at all, you know. So, you know, definitely, yeah, fish do learn, and they do get smart.
Yeah, I haven't done any bone fishing down in the Keys at all. I'm planning on making a trip over to the Bahamas this spring and do some bone fishing over there. In fact, we're going to check into it and see what the regulations are, if they have any objections to me bringing the sled over there. I've got a couple of my friends and good customers that have large boats that can accommodate a kayak or two on the bow or alongside the gunwale that we can take over to the Bahamas, and I think it would be an absolute trip to be able to do some bottom fishing off the Bahamas and also some flat fishing for bonefish over there out of the kayaks, you know, film it and stuff like that. So we'll see.
Well, the difference, you know, the bonefish in the Bahamas, okay, there's a lot more of them over there, okay? They're a lot more plentiful, but they're a little bit smaller, you know. You know, a 15-pound bonefish is like, you know, that's the pinnacle that every saltwater fly fisherman that fishes for bonefish is looking for. You know, that's your, that, you know, you can't really get any better than that, you know, bonefish wise. Your chances of catching a big bonefish like that, you know, in the 10 to 15 pound range is definitely in the Keys, you know. And I can't believe you never, man, dude, there is some camping, there's some campgrounds there that are in the Keys that are just fantastic, you know. That's probably the cheapest place you could stay in the Keys, you know, and you're right on the water's edge. So it's great, and you can take your kayaks in there and everything. It's awesome. But the bonefish in the Keys are definitely smart, and you really have to work hard to try to get one of those, man. But they're a lot easier to catch in the Bahamas, and they're all over the place, too.
Yeah, I got a friend of mine who lives over there in Andros, over by the Air Force Base, at the Air Force Base, I should say, and he tells me, you want to catch bonefish on fly, this is what you do.
in the Bahamas. You go out, you find yourself a conch, you smash the conch in the bits, take it, throw it out on the flat, wait 15 minutes, and throw a fly towards it. He says,
no kidding.
He says they will literally be 100 bonefish in the vicinity of where that conch was broken up, looking for the meat off that conch. And he's like, they're so stupid because they're in like a rage trying to pick up all the little tidbits that,
yeah,
you know, you drop a little clump of anything, marabou hair or whatever, down in front of it, and they'll pick it up. You know, it's just, I don't know, man. I want to try and venture out and do more things this year, especially out of kayak, and I want to be as well-rounded of an angler as I can be. You know, I mean, I'm looking forward mainly this year to the tournament season, and you know, I want to fish the Irish Water Dog deal up there in Jacksonville area. I want to fish the Jacksonville Big Classic or whatever the heck they call it, and you know, get over on your coast, do some fishing over there again. I haven't fished there in quite a while.
Yeah, anytime. Hey, if you want to, you know, anytime that you want to come over, I got like the most comfortable, you know, piece of crap couch ever. I swear. Okay. And anytime you want to come over, just bring your stuff and you know, at least give me a couple of days' notice so I can run the vacuum through the place or something, you know. But hey, do you know Charlie Polochak?
I don't think I do.
He's from Irish Water Dogs, and he's going to be up in Jacksonville at Little Talbot with the Yak Angler trip. And he's on the chat right now, and I'm reading what he's saying, and looks like he's really going to hook us up, man. He's like from that area, so he knows what's going on out there. So hopefully he'll put us on some fish. Says he's been getting some pig redfish in like 6 inches of water.
Nice. I'm looking at the chat board now. I see his buddies with the guys there at Strike Zone. We're really good friends with the Strike Zone down here in Melbourne as well. I'm excited about that, man. I really want to ask him if he knows. I'm not familiar with him. I know. Is he from Harley? Is he from Strike Zone, or is he from your Irish Water Dogs team? I don't know the personnel at Strike Zone in Jacksonville. I know the guys down here. Okay, I'm pretty good friends with Sean, and you know, we work kind of hand in hand as two stores, which is kind of neat. To kind of change the subject a little bit, this industry is very it's very driven on loyalty. You know, you have your shop that you shop at over there, I'm sure.
Oh,
you
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's the one tackle store that if you have a good old tackle shop, that's the one you're going to. And that's the way it is over here. Us and Strike Zone are far enough away from each other in the county where I don't think we really take any business away from each other. He services the south end of the county. We service kind of like the center and the north end of the county. But say we're out of a reel and we have a customer that wants one and he's got one in stock, he'll lend us one until we get a replacement for it so that we still make the sale, which it's kind of unheard of in this industry, guys, to kind of step out like that and do those types of things. But it just goes to show the kind of folks that run Strike Zone, both Jacksonville and Melbourne. It just goes to show what kind of guys they are. They're good people.
Yeah, and that's excellent. That's one thing about our sport, you know. You know, people are always kind of waving at each other and stuff on kayaks, and you always, you know, I don't know about you, but I see kayaks on top of cars all over the place, you know, and I can see it a mile away, and, you know, it's really funny. But, yeah, I find that a lot of the kayak people that I meet putting in or taking out, you know, when I'm going out fishing, are always super super duper friendly, you know, and always ready to give you a hand, you know. So that's really cool.
It's really cool, man. I really enjoy it, you know, and it's one of those sports that, you know, I know my kids are going to get into. I know they're going to enjoy it. I got nephews that I take fishing with me all the time, or not all the time, but I have taken fishing with me on a few occasions, and they love it, man. In fact, probably the best kayak story I have for you is my nephew Tanner was, I want to say he was 5 years old. We took him out fishing, and this kid, first of all, is like a daredevil, right? Kid's got no fear. Climbs huge trees already. He's like, how old's Tanner, Jeff? He's 6 years old. So he was probably younger than five when he caught his fish. But anyway, we get him out on the on my wife's native ultimate, and he's standing up the whole entire time, right? And I'm thinking to myself, God, this kid's a natural. He's standing on a little tiny step stool that I got him to sit on as like a seat for the kayak.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's not a tandem, so it's almost like a little small casting platform, you know?
Yeah.
And I look over and I see redfish tailing, and I know he's too young to be an accurate caster, so I make a cast for him. I hand him the rod. I said, listen, reel, just reel. It's reel. You know, he'll come up and he'll eat it. It's reel. And sure enough, man, this kid catches it. First ever redfish is like a 25, 26 inch redfish, right?
Yeah.
And it was amazing. The smile that he had on his face landing that fish, his dad sitting behind him, the smile he had on his face when he landed the fish, the whole experience of the boat being spun around in circles by this little 25, 26 inch fish was just really cool, man. I've got some really cool pictures that I took that day of him with his first red, and you just don't get those types of experiences in a boat, in my opinion. And I think that's why this sport's growing ever so fast, is because it's affordable. You know, going back to affordability, it's affordable. The whole family can get involved and get into it for a lot less than you'll ever get into buying a boat. And,
oh, I know.
Just the experience itself is awesome.
Yeah, I absolutely love it, being out in the serenity and the silence and just the quiet, you know, being one with nature. You know, it sounds like a bunch of, you know, off to the, you know, races, crazy hippie stuff, which is okay. But, yeah, being out in nature, man, it's just, myself, you know, a boat, yeah, you might get there faster or something, but, you know, you're going to have all kinds of, you know, a lot of maintenance with it and stuff. And you're right, you know, a whole entire family of four can get into, you know, kayaks for less than what it would cost you to buy a boat.
Oh, yeah,
that's
trust
awesome.
Me, I got a 25-foot center console with twin 150 Yamahas sitting on a trailer that I haven't used in a while, you know,
yeah.
Because it doesn't make sense. It's too expensive to run. I mean, it holds 168 gallons of fuel.
Oh, God.
You know? I mean, it costs a small fortune to fill the thing up.
Yeah,
but,
no kidding.
No, you know, and I really enjoy getting new people into the sport. And I think I was asked once before if 50 years from now, if somebody were to do a write-up about you, what would you want your legacy to be? And, you know, obviously I'd want somebody to say that I was a good husband to my wife and a good father to my kids, but, you know, I want to be known as a good steward for the sport, you know. I really try and promote it as best I can. There's days, there's weeks on end where my kayaks stay in the bed of my truck just so that when I go to work at the bait shop, people see that I've got kayaks in the back of the truck, and it almost forces them to ask about it, you know?
Yeah.
And I love to introduce people to it. It's a lot of fun. And now with the fly tying, it's another thing that, another facet, another way that I can get people involved. It's like I had a guy come in the shop today. We were talking about flies, and he's thinking about getting into fly fishing. And one of those crazy patterns I just tied up, I had that picture on my Facebook of, like, I don't know how many flies are there, like a dozen.
Yeah, you
or
had
whatever.
Like a dozen sitting there, yeah.
Yeah. I gave him one of them, and I was like, here, man, just why don't you take one of these, and if you get yourself a fly rod, try it out, see what you think about it, you know? I mean, you can do this too. Anybody can tie them. It's something else. It's another way to get people pumped on the sport, you know? I mean,
yeah. I did that with Tampa Bay kayak fishers when they had the Florida Sportsman Show over here in Tampa. You guys have it over there on that coast too. I'm not sure, probably Fort Lauderdale or something. But you know, I was sitting there, and that's all I did all day for a Sunday was sit there and tie flies. And people would come by and be like, "Oh, hey, you know what's that? That's cool. I've always wanted to do it." And here you go. You know, have fun. And I was just, you know, tying clousers and deceivers, you know, because they're easy. And you know, those people, they thought that they really, you know, that was like the greatest thing. And they were looking at into, you know, people had fly rods on display there and for sale and everything, and they were eating it up, man. Everybody loves getting a freebie, you know, some sort of a freebie. You know, I thought it was really cool because I feel like I get to introduce people to it too, you know.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? You said that everyone likes a freebie. We have gotten inundated at my store with a bunch of hats and visors, and we had a bunch of shirts. We've given them all away pretty much, but like decals and just things like that. And I'll see like a father and son come in, and the kid won't be wearing a hat. Dad will be wearing a hat, and I'll grab a hat out of the box and be like, here, buddy, you need a fishing hat. You can't go fishing without a hat. And the smile on people's faces when they get something for free, it's incredible, you know. It's almost like addicting, you know. You see it, and you're just like, oh, man, next guy comes in, I'm going to give him a free pack of Gulp, you know.
Yeah.
A free pack of Gulp up on the counter, and the guy, I'm like, here, buddy, why don't you go out and try these? And they look at you all cross-eyed, like, you setting me up, you know?
Yeah, what do you want?
Thoughts or something, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun, man. It's just, you know, that's what this sport is all about. It's all about family. It's all about friends. All about relaxing. It's not about stress. It's not about yelling and screaming. It's not about hooting and hollering and getting crazy with it. It's about relaxation and just enjoying yourself, you know? And
absolutely.
If I can make it up there to the Jacksonville deal, which I really hope that I can, even just for like an afternoon, just to hang out, drink a few beers or whatever, I'm going to bring a bunch of the flies with me and just give out little packs to everybody, just, you know, try my stuff out, see what you think. And then, too, I was thinking about something else that we can work out. I've got a couple of companies that are really good to me as far as freebies, and I was thinking about for your radio show and then also the earlier show, why not put together like a small prize pack? And every now and again, you know, you get a guy that calls in and gives you a bunch of good information, or, you know, just randomly pick somebody out of the chat room and throw them something their way. You know, again, going back to everyone loves free. You know,
yeah,
that'd be pretty cool.
No, that's,
you know?
That's great. I don't have a problem with that. In fact, it's been a long time since I ran a contest on my blog. And, you know, a lot of times I'll just get a little fly box and I'll put, you know, a dozen of my own flies in there that I've tied and throw that in there and say, you know, whoever, you know, have a, you know, leave a comment and, you know, use a number generate randomizer and pick the number of comment and, you know, they get a free fly box, you know, full of flies. So I think that's a great idea. You know, we'll have to work on something like that.
Yeah,
but
you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I don't know, man. I just, you know, I'm kind of getting away from using my spinner rods and my bait casters and stuff. I'm really big in fly fishing a lot, you know. And I used to love it as a kid catching brim and bass and that kind of thing, but you know, it's different to me, man. It gets
addicting. I'm telling you.
They're on such a different level, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I hate to do this because it's going to piss somebody off, but you can go and throw a chunk of ladyfish in the middle of a flat just about anywhere in the state, and you're going to catch a redfish. Right? A redfish is basically a glorified catfish with a spot on its tail. All right, they're really nothing. They're really not that hard to target, and they're really not that hard to catch, especially on spin. But to do it on fly and to tie the fly that you throw at the fish, watch the fish take it. It's a totally different level of just like, wow. You know what I'm saying?
I didn't pick up a spinning rod for a long time before I got into my, up until the time I got my kayak. I didn't pick up a spinning reel or a spinning rig for a long, long time because it just felt so clunky. You know, I'd be out there fishing and, you know, with a fly rod all day, and then I'd go and pick up a spinning rig and it would just feel like something totally foreign and clunky, like it weighed, you know, 10 pounds more than it really did, you know. And there's definitely some sort of magic with a fly setup. So I know exactly what you're talking about, and that's okay. You know, I mean, you can catch just as many fish, fly fishing, and you know, I can probably tell you an advantage that you know, you don't have to reel the thing all the way back in order to cast again. You know, you can just reload the thing and cast it out again. You know, you pull your fly through the strike zone, nothing, just pick it up and cast it back out. You know, so you can you're probably getting more presentations to fish than you would with a spinning setup.
Yeah, and I found that for me anyway, when I started really getting back into it, I tend to bring my tried and true, one of my favorite combos that I own right now is a Shimano Stratic CI4. It's a 2500. It's a carbon fiber body reel. It only weighs 7 ounces, so it's really, really lightweight. But
yeah.
I built on a G Loomis blank, a 7 foot Loomis blank, and you know, it's a great combo. Super light. If you ever watched my little redfish video I put together, fishing in the Indian River.
Is that on your blog?
No, it isn't yet. It will be. It's on Vimeo, Vimeo.com.
You can
go to Vimeo.com and type in Indian River redfish. You'll see it. But they're just small rat reds that I'm catching in the morning. So I caught like 9 in 45 minutes. And the rod that I was using in that video is that rod I'm speaking of. But I would find myself bringing that pole with me and bringing the fly rod with me. And my problem is I look out over the flat and I see a tailing fish 50, 60 feet away. I know I'm deadly accurate with the spinner rod, right? The chances of me getting the fly to him from in the sitting position for me anyway in the kayak is a little tough at that distance. It's not that far, but for me, not having, thrown a fly that often up until this point, it was a little tough. So I pick up the spinner rod, boom, fish on. You know, next cast, boom, fish on. Next cast, boom, fish on. So why would I switch
the
spinner rod to the fly rod? So what I forced myself to do is leave the spin stuff at home, because if I bring it, I'm going to use it.
That's the best way to do it. But, you know, I would go out in my kayak and I would take just my fly rig with me, but then the weather conditions would be terrible and I couldn't, 25 mile an hour wind, and who wants to fly fish in that, but and also, speaking of legends, I saw your boy Flip Pallet there on a fishing show there last weekend. So I don't know, I'm not sure exactly where he was, but it was fishing in the rain and fly fishing and catching giant redfish, so it looked like it might have been around the lagoon or something like that.
Yeah, probably. Good old Flip lives about, maybe 15, 20 minutes from my house. And every now and again, you see the guy in the fly fisherman here in Titusville, or you'll see him at just the grocery store or whatever, dude. And listen, I don't get starstruck, all right? I've been, one of my best friends is an actor in Hollywood. He's been in a bunch of movies. He's on an MTV show right now. And I was Bat Boy for the Florida Marlins for a bunch of years when I was a kid, and I was around celebrities a lot growing up, so it's not like I get, all googly-eyed or anything like that. But Flip Pallet's the man, period.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I grew up watching the Walker's K Chronicles.
That was my
show. Every weekend when that show was on, I watched it. I recorded it. I've got it on VHS tapes. I mean, the guy is not only a fishing legend, but he is an amazing storyteller. And he is of the school that is going away. You know, you don't see a lot of guys from his generation that are still active and doing things like that. Lefty Craig, Chico, Flip, those guys are legends. Those guys are like the pioneers of saltwater fly fishing, and especially guiding and guiding in micro skiffs and guiding in super shallow water. I mean, that's how Flip made a name for himself, was basically pulling around in the Mosquito Lagoon and pulling around the Indian River before a flats boat was even heard of, using whatever he can get his hands on. But, it's I don't know, man. It's such a crazy sport that we're all involved in.
I'll tell you, my suit, one day this guy will be a legend too, is do you get Flats Class TV over there?
Yeah.
Okay, C.A. Richardson, he's over here in St. Pete. I've gone to several of that guy's seminars, and let me tell you something. That guy not only is he the nicest guy in the world, but that guy knows his, he knows what he's talking about, man, fishing-wise. And one day that guy's going to be up there in the same league as, you know, all of those Hall of Famer guys, you know. That dude runs a, he runs a, like a, he calls it Flats Class, you know, it's the actual Flats Class, and it's like a 7 or 8 hour, like a classroom situation where he does a seminar, and it's a bunch of, you know, gives you the packet of stuff, and you go through all of your, you know, all of the paperwork and stuff with you, and it's a really, really intensive learning experience about fishing, man. That guy is awesome. And I believe he's doing one sometime in February over in Ocala is like his next one. But, you know, you ever get a chance to go see that guy, he's really, really, really good. But
yeah, I plan on doing some seminars and some things like that this year up at the shop, trying to, again, promote the sport of kayak fishing and just fishing in general. That show is actually a pretty good show. And again, I'm not a big fishing show fan anymore. I think that most of them have all sold out. And I'm not, you know, like Flip, that's one of the things about Flip that you can never say is that his show was like completely driven by sponsors. Cause I mean, you never heard this down, you know, like never heard Loomis. You never heard Shimano, or,
right.
You know, Berkeley Gulf or Power
Strike King,
you know, and yeah. I understand nowadays in the corporate world, that's the way things kind of have to be in a sense. But, you know, it's just like, listen, I got guys that come into my shop that actually ask me for the stuff they saw on TV because it works, is their words.
Oh,
it's gotta
hey,
work. It's on, it's,
true story,
it's
gotta work,
you know. It's on television, you know.
Yeah,
and I'm
absolutely.
Like, I'm like, dude, just because the guy's got it on TV and talking about the product doesn't mean that it works, and it doesn't mean that he's even fucking it doesn't even mean that he's even actually fishing with it, you know? I mean, I've got a pile of guys that that come into my shop that are sponsored anglers, and they don't use the products they're sponsored by. They use the company to get to where they need to be financially to fish the tournaments that they want to fish, but they don't use the products. They don't use... Like, I got one guy in particular. He's on the Penn Pro staff. He doesn't fish Penn reels. He fishes Shimano's. Penn sends him a bunch of stuff. And he's like, oh, yeah, Penn's great, blah, 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 blah. And you look at his boat, it's all Shimano products.
Yeah.
You know? Or I got another buddy of mine that had a fishing show, actually still does have a fishing show. And he was sponsored by Quantum. Right? Well, one of the episodes of his show, he must have said Quantum 100 times. and you know, I was like, man, really? Quantum? Really? And yeah, I see 3 or 4 letter bottles. My bad. I'm sorry. But
that's okay.
It's late, man. It's 12:24 over here.
I know.
I'm trying to stay awake. But anyways, oh, you must have said Quantum 1 million times.
Yeah.
And then the very next shot, his buddy's reeling in a fish on a Shimano reel. You couldn't have edited that footage any better than that, you know?
Right.
It's just funny, man. And I know the guy, and I know that when he's not on camera, he's fishing somebody else's product. It's just the way it, you know.
It happens. You know, you got to have, you know, the corporate sponsors and stuff. I mean, that's a big part of, you know, being in that industry. And I'll tell you right now, when I used to bass fish all the time, I was like obsessed with bass fishing for, you know, back in the mid-90s. And, you know, they didn't have, you know, I didn't have the web back then, you know, and I had magazines. Well, you know, Bassmasters magazine was like, you know, read that thing front to back like, you know, 5 times. And, you know, by the time you get done reading it the 5th time, it's like, okay, the new one's coming out. Well, you know, if the guy won the Bassmasters Classic, if he was pimping a lure, you know, and I remember it was some kind of crankbait that was about, you know, $10 for a crankbait. You know, I wouldn't pay $10 for a crankbait now, you know. I don't care how good it was. But, you know, due to the fact that dude, you know, won the Bassmasters Classic with it, you know, I had like 3 of them in my tackle box. So that goes to show right there, man. I'm telling you, that guy on TV used it. It's got to be good.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and there's a lot to be said for that. And definitely the companies nowadays are putting a lot of money into the advertising. And they're actually cutting back a lot on the pro staff. They're trimming the fat, so to speak. Guys that have been on pro staffs for years that aren't doing anything at all for the companies are getting cut. And I'm friends with several of them that have been dropped from major companies, major sponsorships. I'm talking like boat sponsorships. I'm talking electronic sponsorships, rod and reel sponsorships, where you're potentially losing, you know, $30,000 to $50,000 a year out of your fishing budget because the companies are dropping because you're just not doing your job as a pro staffer, you know. And
yeah,
it just that's the other thing too. You know, it's funny because we get a lot of young guys in my shop, and they all want to be on a pro staff. They all want to be, you know, this, that, and the other. And what guys don't understand is that things have changed. It's not like it was 10, 15 years ago where a company will say, oh, you're a pro staffer because you catch a fish and put it in a picture. And that's all you have to do. But, you know, everything else, it's like, for instance, I'm with Yeti Coolers. All right. Yeti Coolers doesn't want me on their pro staff just to say that, look, Chuck's got a Yeti Cooler sitting behind the seat of his kayak. You know, they want me to be on their pro staff because they know that I have an outlet in order to sell their product. You know, and I think that's it's gotten away from what it really needs to be about. And it needs to be like the shows and stuff really to be more about information, less about commercials. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah, that's what people are looking for, you know. They want information on the product. You know, if they're going to spend, you know, $150 on a cooler, you know, like, I mean, those things, those Yetis, those are really nice. I mean, but I me personally, I'm just not going to spend that kind of money on a cooler. I don't care how great it is, you know. It's just not in my budget, you know.
No, but, you know, it's like what I'm referring to is mainly like, for instance, the Flats Class. You were talking about
yeah.
that show. And
uh-huh.
that show's a good quality show because, granted, it's striking or whatever bait that they're sponsored by. But it's that bait down your throat, not the whole show or ProCure or whatever it is you're using, but it's very informative. And that's something that Flip's show was. And that's something that Mark Sosin's show is and was. You know, he showed you how to tie knots. He showed you how to do things. He showed you how to rig.
Right.
You know? And it wasn't about the guy behind the camera or the guy in front of the camera, I should say. It was more about getting information out to the person sitting behind a television set, which at the end of the day is the only reason why anybody watches fishing shows. You don't watch them because it's entertaining, because, oh, look, the guy caught another trout. Who cares? It's a freaking trout. You've caught a million of them, you know? You
yeah.
watch it because you want to learn something. You want to learn a tip or a technique that's going to help you or improve your fishing ability. So, you know, I like this form. I like the radio, the web-based radio kind of deal. I think that it's a great idea. I applaud Tree Hugger for setting it up because it is a cool way to get information out, you know, and sometimes it does get kind of jumbled, especially the earlier show. I mean, we'll have, you know, myself, Dee, Bill, you know, you, you know, 10, 15 people on the line at one time, and everyone's trying to have a second or two to talk, and it's kind of jumbled, but the information still gets out there, and that's, you know, that's something that's been missing for a long time. You can't go on a forum, really, for the most part, and get a straight answer. You know?
Oh, I know. I gave up on the forums. Because I got tired of, you know, and I'm not trying to be negative or anything, but I got tired of everybody on there, you know, anytime that you post a picture, it's, well, you know, you're not holding that fish right, or, you know, you're blah, 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 this, or blah, 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 that, and it's a bunch of, you know, it's a bunch of negativity, and I got really tired of it, so, you know, I don't do too many forums, with the exception of, yakangler.com. But, all right, Chuck, we got to get out of here. The queen is about ready to tell me that there's less than 1 minute remaining. But I've...